high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Well, good morning to everybody out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Meadows, live here at First String Sports, April 27th, year of our Lord, 2024. First String Sports, the place to be. That's what I call it. It's where I do my show every Saturday, off to the right-hand side when you walk into the store. Towards the back, do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room. No other place where I'd rather do a show mostly about high school sports. We'll be talking about our wonderful four guests in just a second. But, yeah, First String Sports, again, they are awesome here. The only place where you can get your Letterman's Jackets, Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. They have anything sports-related that you need here, equipment-wise, Letterman's Jacket-wise, hat-wise. Heck, I've bought tons of stuff from these guys over the last few years for my students. I'm an athletic director as well, so I'll come in here and say, hey, I need this. All right, they'll hook me up. Whatever you need down here, First String Sports. All right, so what is going on the show today? Well, like I said, four guests all here live at First String Sports. After the break, we're going to be talking with Jackson Moore from barkboard.com. He joins me to talk about Fresno State's spring preview football game. Don't call it the spring game. It is the spring preview at Valley Children's Stadium. Jackson does a great job breaking down everything Fresno State related, where it's football, basketball, a little bit about baseball, but he's one of the insiders. He's a guru with Fresno State sports. Looking forward to talking to him. I'm going to be breaking down what he's going to be looking for in today's spring preview, which starts at 12 o'clock. A little bit about men's basketball, right? Vance Wahlberg, we know. Everybody knows. Coaches everywhere know about Vance Wahlberg getting the job at Fresno State. A little bit about that. His roster is starting to shape up, getting a few dudes, got the Junior College National Player of the Year. Everyone's excited about that, but he's got a lot more work to be done. So we're talking about Jackson, about Fresno State football and basketball coming up out after the break. After that, we've got a new guy, Phil Benanti, who, starting this Monday, is going to be the new 1430 ESPN 3-5 radio host. I believe it's Monday through Friday, so we're sneaking in an extra bonus day. Tony D and his great show, The Bulldog Hour, right? So right after that, really looking forward to that. That's going to be awesome. He's a Fresno State grad, graduated in 2015, brings a wealth of knowledge to our airwaves, knows pro sports as well, obviously high school, and he's going to be diving in to what we love, high school sports here in the Central section. I'm also excited to talk an hour number two, at the top of hour number two, Coach Davey Jones of Hoover High comes on. Patriots are 13-11 overall, 7-3 in league. Coach Jones brings certainly unique background experience. He was in law enforcement for 17 years before getting into education. Always up for a great conversation with Coach Jones. On Saturday mornings, I see him here a lot. He'll come in, and like me, he'll need some equipment, bucket of baseballs. Seen him buy a hitting screen. So he's done a little bit of everything before he got into education coaching. He is a great guy, very, very passionate. So that is Coach Dave Jones coming in, top of hour number two. At the bottom of hour number two, Mitch Mulligan. If you follow high school baseball at all, you definitely know who Mitch is. Mully is another well-respected coach in the community. He had to step down from coaching this year due to a stroke that he suffered in the fall. Very, very scary situation. He has it pretty much under control, but he had to step away this year. That was a very hard decision. February 14th, he made that announcement. And Mulligan has been a friend of the show, always willing to come on the show and talk about his program. Very well respected, like I say. So we wish nothing but the best from Coach Mulligan. He's coming to the show. He's going to share his story at the bottom of hour number two. I think a lot of you guys, like us, were riveted about the NFL draft, where a couple dudes from the Valley, where they start at the high school level, where were they going to land? Talked a lot about Xavier Worthy because he busted out that 4.21 40 at the combine, a record. Nobody at the combine is ever faster than what Xavier Worthy ran at the at that event. Capture the attention of everybody out there. So we thought end the first round, right? For sure. A lot of people thought maybe at 28 where Buffalo had it. The Chiefs had a pick there as well. And what happened? Well, we approached pick number 28 where I thought the Bills should have picked him. Stephon Diggs is gone, right? Who's Josh Allen, our guy, going to throw to? Thought, well, Worthy would be a great, great pick. But no, Kansas City swoops in, does a little conniving, and gets that pick and takes Xavier Worthy at 28. Kansas City Chiefs with Xavier Worthy. Can you imagine that? They look at him as like a mini, slot guy, Tyreek Hill type player. Just slide him in there and do some things. Patrick Mahomes sent out this tweet, man. He's pumped about this. So Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs. We're all excited about that. He's pumped. Family's pumped. Are you kidding me? Defending Super Bowl champs, Xavier Worthy. Then Jalen McMillan got drafted last night at number 92. Obviously from San Joaquin Memorial. I mentioned that Xavier Worthy was from Central Texas, right? Well, maybe I didn't, but everybody around here knows that. But Jalen McMillan at 92 went to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. San Joaquin Memorial, University of Washington. He wasn't expecting to be drafted by Tampa Bay. Talked to our guy, Gabe Camarillo, about that. He's like, yeah, I saw this number during the draft. I didn't recognize it. My agent's like, pick it up. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he drafted their guy. Going to a pretty good offense, right? Gets to play alongside Mike Evans, who I think is a future Hall of Famer, Baker Mayfield. So congrats to Jalen. Congrats to Xavier Worthy. We're waiting to see where Kendall Milton is going to be drafted today. And if not, if it doesn't work out for Kendall from Buchanan, University of Georgia, then he'll have his pick. His agent and he will talk about it. So there's going to be a bunch of teams that come calling, right, if he doesn't get drafted. So he's going to be signed somewhere. So looking forward to watching where Kendall Milton lands in this year's draft as well. All right, we're going to hit a break here. We're going to be talking with Jackson Moore about Fresno State and other things. You've been listening to 1430 ESPN.
All of California.
All right, welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Matters, live here at First String Sports. And we got Jackson Moore in the house. After that, those wonderful guitar riffs. Works for 247 Sports, 24/7 Sports, Barkboard, obviously. He's a Fresno State insider. Going to be talking about the football spring preview. Don't call it the spring game, right? And the men's basketball hiring of Coach Vance Wahlberg. Jackson, when you walked in here, you mentioned a little bit just how crazy and busy that your life has been the last 30 days. You put on 5,000 miles on your car traveling to all these different spring football practices, all the different places you cover.
Yeah, so of course, along with Fresno State, I cover San Jose State, Cal, and Stanford for 24/7 Sports, and that's 60 different practices I'm trying to get to. And, I was able to accomplish, I think the number I landed at was like 32. So a lot of back and forth, a lot of driving, and like double the normal spring workload for a reporter or a team or whatever that's going to get 15 a lot of practices.
How are you surviving that? Like, what are you listening to, and what kind of drink are you? A coffee guy? Are you loading up with coffee or Red Bulls, or what are you doing?
Yeah, lots of coffee. Hotels with coffee complimentary in them, so I can stock up. A lot of podcasts.
Okay, that's good. Gosh, I can't imagine. I hope they put you up in decent hotels. Right, you don't have any horror stories of some of these hotels that sometimes people get put up in.
Last night, I'm losing track of days already. I went to San Jose State Thursday morning. I didn't have my next practice at Stanford till Friday night, so I went to Half Moon Bay. I worked in my car, looking at the ocean. So sometimes it works out pretty good.
Good, you got some alone time. That's awesome. All right, so today, after you chatted up with me, going to go to the spring preview as well as I am when my show is over. What storyline intrigues you the most? What are you looking for today?
The big one and an extra local one, I think, for me is just seeing what Jaden Mandel does. He's been the number two since the bowl game, and he's gotten all the two reps this spring. Joshua Wood, who would be competing with him, is coming off of surgery, and hasn't really been at a point yet to challenge him or take those reps. So it's just been Mandel. And, you know, you got Mikey Keene, a lot of returners on the first team, so they're not getting a whole lot of action. They probably won't play more than a series or two today. So it should be a lot of Mandel. We should get a sense of exactly how he's fitting in, how he's looking. And, of course, there's 10 newcomers. Want to see how Corey Foreman, the former five-star from USC, looks in this scrimmage. And the early enrollee wide receiver out of Long Beach Poly, Jordan Malaulu, has been having a really good spring. So anxious to see how some of those newcomers look too.
So you've had access to some of these practices as well, right? So you're mentioning, you know, some guys that you're looking forward to seeing, especially Mandel. Has he just like stood out in some of those practices? Why are you so excited to see his development?
Yeah, well, so we get access to practice, but then they usually close down when they're doing like 11 on 11. So now we get to see it. So I'm anxious, you know. Yeah, we kind of have to just take everyone's word for how things are going and some of that stuff. So now we get to put eyes on Mandel, see how he does and handles it and how he's looking, how he's throwing the ball. Because, you know, when there's a competition, you can kind of understand, you know, okay, this guy's better than that guy. But if it's just him, it's tough to really get a gauge. You're going to get a lot of coach speech and stuff. So looking forward to see how he does there.
And I've been to a few of these as well for those out there that may not have gone to a spring preview or thinking about going. Like, what does it look like on the field? I mean, are these guys hitting hard? Is it just a full scrimmage where, you know, Mikey Keene gets the ball maybe at the 50-yard line and goes against the defense and tries to score, and then Jaden would get his turn? What does that look like?
Yeah, so it will be a full practice. So it starts at noon. If you get there at noon, you're probably going to watch some drills for about an hour. So don't get too impatient. I don't know, around one or so, they should probably get into it for real, doing the scrimmages and stuff. And they'll have full 11 on 11. I imagine what we saw last year, a lot of the veterans took about one, two series. I remember Stephen Comstock had a one-handed interception on the first drive last spring preview, and then he sat the rest of the day. So there may be some of those guys. The team has been pretty banged up this spring, but they did get healthier this week, so I think there's enough bodies to, you know, not have to dial things back or be too concerned about that, so that should be good. That should allow them to have enough reps to go around and scrimmage for a full length. They'll probably start at the 25, their own 25, go length of the field, cycle in ones, twos, and threes, and then do some red zone periods too, ramp up the highlights a little bit, get some extra scores that way, and kind of who stands out with that opportunity.
And I like what you said, get some highlights, because because there's going to be a lot of cameras out there, a lot of film, and they're going to tweet some stuff out, and, you know, all the good stuff, right? We want to make Fresno State look as good as possible. So, Jackson, what are some of the strengths and weaknesses where the program sits right now?
It's very interesting this spring, just thinking about where they were a year ago, where there were six different quarterbacks competing for the starting job,
right?
And now it's just Mikey. You know, you didn't really know what was going to happen at running back. All those receivers that they had with Jake Haener were gone, and now pretty much all those players that answered those questions last year are back for the most part. I mean, you do lose some pretty big hitters when you think about Eric Brooks and Jalen Gill, Trey Watson. I mean, that's your number one through three and five in the statistics. But, you know, you still got Magdalena, you got Josiah Freeman, you got Jalen Moss, and now you're seeing a few other guys emerge too this spring, so that's exciting. But it just feels like this is like part two of a two-year process, where last year it felt like the offense was starting from scratch. And defensively, again, they lose about four or five pretty significant players, but we saw the second-teamers, some of them, start to rise up last year, and a couple of new faces are also competing this spring. So it just feels like this is a, you know, not a work in progress. There's not a whole lot of storylines where that position battle is happening or this guy came out of nowhere. It's kind of just been a progression from 23 to 24, I would say.
And you mentioned year two. In year two, there was a lot of unknowns last year. We are now in year two. And with Mikey Keene's development, do you believe – you know, he's more comfortable in the offense? We know, you know, as a fan base, what he can do on the field. We've seen some moments of really, really good football from him. So what do you expect from him as far as taking a leap?
Yeah, I think from what I'm hearing, he is settling in a little bit more as a passer, which I'm excited about. I felt like the first month or so was pretty spectacular what he was doing, and then maybe some October, November left fans a little unsure. And I think the O-line, the protection, probably had something to do with that. I think he had some happy feet in the back half of the season that he didn't have in the early half, and he got banged up quite a bit. So just to be healthy and just kind of restart the spring, settle in, not have to compete with anyone else, and just develop his game. From what I'm hearing, his arm's looking a bit stronger. They're trying to be more explosive to incorporate the deep ball a little bit more, which seemed to be a struggle at times last year, at least the way defenses were playing against them. So yeah, this is all just kind of like 2.0 stuff for Keen this spring to take his game up to another notch. And I think as long as he has the protection, they'll accomplish that.
Mikey Keen 2.0, so to speak, year two for him. So offensive line, right? It's not super, it's not, you know, sexy to talk about the offensive line at times, but every coach knows, everybody who knows football well knows, if you don't have a good offensive line, you're in trouble, right? Mm. So how's the offensive line shaping up?
Yeah, I think you asked me about the strengths and weaknesses earlier. I neglected the weaknesses.
There we go.
This is probably it. You know, it's an O-line that has, you know, not been over the top poor, you know, the last year or two, but has certainly, compared to the talent they've had, the skills position has been the weak point in the offense. And now this spring, you know, Jacob Spomer is still out from that injury he suffered at San Jose State last November, and that's like your best O-lineman. So to not have him, it certainly looks different. Mose Babao has moved to center, where they lose Jacob Usaya, really the only starting O-lineman they lose from last year. So it's a lot of the same faces, a lot of seniors. You know, they could theoretically start a whole lineup that graduates after this season. But it's, can they take a far enough leap forward? And also this spring, there's been quite a bit of injuries in that group too. So there's some guys in positions maybe you didn't expect and some new faces. So I think that is a spot where they're going to try and hit the portal, hit junior college ranks, and maybe bring in another guy or two to try to bolster that up, maybe fill in a spot. The right guard spot is particularly open right now.
Yeah, and it sounds like the last couple of years, Jackson, that offensive line has just been shifting around, right? Plugging guys in that they're not very comfortable with. So that's always an issue. What about the running back situation? Obviously, Sherrod had some incredible games, and he looked really good at times as well. We always talked about Brandon Ramirez, a local kid from San Joaquin Memorial, we were able to watch in high school. Is he going to get some carries? Last year, we kept thinking, man, maybe this might be the time where Brandon gets some carries. And then Bryson Donaldson, really quick, though, Jackson, he didn't enroll early, did he?
Right, so he won't come till the fall.
But okay.
I think there's a chance for him to, because you've got Sherrod. One thing on Sherrod, I think the guy we saw against Boise State in that kick return, some of the other big games he had, was the guy that they were expecting all offseason long. And he got dinged up pretty close to the season opener, didn't play much against Purdue. So this spring's kind of been like, all right, he's the guy. You know, he's one of our best players, basically, kind of thing. That's what you're hearing. And so I would expect him to be the guy. Elijah Gilliam has been working on his pass protection to earn more reps this time around. And so you got those two, and then you kind of got everyone else. And so Jonathan Arsenault, 2021 recruit, is probably next up from how spring's been going. He's had a good spring. He's been dealing with injuries earlier in his career. But you've got Devin Rivers. You got Brandon Ramirez. You know, they could be battling for probably number four right now, which doesn't leave a lot of reps to be had. They're still redshirt freshmen. They're still young. But it's probably going to be limited, barring injuries, from the top of the room. But I think Donaldson's a guy where, you know, we haven't seen him in that room yet. So, I mean, there's a chance he could come in and right
blow
away,
everybody
yeah,
away.
But, you know, there's also a chance he could just be another guy in the shuffle. I kind of tend towards the former. I think he is going to be pretty impressive in fall camp, but it is going to be tough, at least for those top two guys, to get knocked off.
Yeah, I think, yeah, watching him last year live right on the field, I mean, he's a dude. You know, we talked about how I think he could step up and get some carries this year, but I don't know. Do you think him not enrolling early hurt that a little bit? Would that have been an advantage for him if he would have enrolled early?
It certainly would have helped. I think we're seeing Mandel as an example. You know, he's really – you're seeing that last spring that he got payoff this spring. I mentioned Jordan Malaulu is a guy that is an early enrollee high schooler at wide receiver. Is basically a second-team guy right now. And if he didn't come in, you know, he'd be starting from scratch on August 1st. So – it certainly would have helped, but I do think there's, you know, that back half of the room is so open that if he is the guy, if he comes in and has a legit fall camp, that he can pass some people up pretty quick.
Talking with Jackson Moore about Fresno State football. A couple more things about the football team. I didn't see or I haven't heard, that's why you're here, of a lot of transfer portal guys going out and going in. Is that a good thing? Does that mean the program is pretty stabilized and guys that want to be Bulldogs are staying Bulldogs? And, you know, obviously we're going to have to get a couple more guys in. You mentioned the offensive line. But is that kind of a good thing that there's not a lot of movement?
Yes and no. It's a good thing there's guys not leaving too much. Trey Watson hurt him going off to Texas A&M. That's a big one. But him and really over the course of this new transfer portal era, that's kind of been the rarity. There hasn't been many of those guys. Evan Williams just got drafted. Yeah. He's one of the few. You know, they're not the norm. It's the rarity. So that's a big deal. And Fresno State has put its NIL efforts out there in a way where they're able to retain players, the guys that maybe if they weren't going to get NIL, maybe they would go look elsewhere. They're able to, you know, keep some of those guys happy, from my understanding. But then when you do keep those guys happy, how much is left to go find new players? And so normally, if you're just looking at the last three seasons or so, this time of year, the Bulldogs have maybe four or five transfers in. There's another four or five coming in the fall. And right now it's just two. It's Foreman and Jairus Atelli from San Jose State is also another D lineman. So, I mean, that's about it right now. But they've been recruiting the portal. So now that the spring window is open, they've been offering especially receivers and offensive linemen. So I think you're going to see them pick up another two, three, or four guys perhaps, and we'll see if there's anything left over to make a run at a couple more too.
Well, times have certainly changed, but I'm looking forward to watching Foreman play. All right, a little over 4 months from now, on August 31st, Jackson, the Bulldogs invade the Big House, playing at Michigan, defending national champs. Obviously, you know Harbaugh. What's a good way to, maybe even now, 4 months away, to kind of frame that football game as fans?
I mean, the way I see it, you've got a team that, in Michigan, there's no way that they can come out on the 31st and be anything close to the team that just won the national championship. I believe they had like 20 players at the combine. I hit Control F to kind of put a list together. And I'm like, there's got to be missing the state part of this Michigan on some of these guys. But no, I mean, they're losing a lot of their team, a lot of their best players, of course. And then you have a coaching change. They got kind of a stability hire there where it's not too big of an overhaul.
Sure.
But
you know,
at the end of the day, if they're the 15th best team in the country, if they're the 20th best, I mean, that's still a pretty tough task. But it is an opponent that you think Fresno State can go in on a given day and compete with. So I think it's one of those things where you kind of go in cautiously optimistic. If they can just hang around, it could get interesting in a hurry. Maybe it becomes one of those classics. I could also see it being, you know, it could get lopsided if Michigan's still that good. I think especially in the trenches where the Bulldogs were talking about this O-line struggle, that could be the thing that kind of makes Fresno State look like a Mountain West school in the Big House. But I think at the other positions, you know, you have a strong group of five team, and even a defending national champion who's losing a lot of talent, you know, it could get interesting. And I think, you know, there's reason to be excited for it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's never too early to talk about football, and why not? Why not the Bulldogs, right? Go in there and do what you can. We've got a couple more minutes here, Jackson. I want to talk about a little bit about basketball and the men's hire at Fresno State. Talk a lot about Coach Wahlberg. Anybody that's out there listening, I'm sure they know Coach Wahlberg, you know, just about as any local basketball coach there is in our history. So, first of all, let's talk about the roster. Picked up a couple guys, National Junior College Player of the Year. That's cool. And then another kid looked really athletic, like a 6'6 kid that can score, do a little bit of everything. Coach Wahlberg-type players. What else do you think Coach Wahlberg needs to get, and what are you hearing about the roster? Is he just portal kind of, you know, is that where he's at right now?
Yeah, portal and junior college. The junior college has been kind to Fresno State so far with the two early commits. At Coach Wahlberg's press conference, he talked about even weeks before he was picked to get the job, he was putting together a kind of a shell staff to go scout, and he mentioned specifically he had a coach at the junior college national championships where Omar Aguilar was playing in that title game, and now he's the guy that they're signing. So a national junior college player of the year. So portal's big, and again, junior college, it's the college basketball's turned into such a year over year where it's tough to recruit a lot of high schoolers and develop them, especially in Wahlberg's system where there could be 10 plus guys in the rotation.
Sure.
And so you need some guys that know what they're doing, that are pretty experienced and can handle it. So the big question is still how many are coming back, because six players hit the portal, but only two have committed elsewhere.
Yeah.
So there's a chance some of those guys end up coming back. There's a chance it could be a whole new roster. There's like three or four guys at the end of the roster from last year who haven't entered the portal. Maybe they stick around. Maybe they take on bigger roles. Maybe they can handle a little bit of a specific role in this scheme. So still a ways to go, but I would expect probably three or four transfers, maybe another junior college player or two to come in before it's said and done.
And Donovan Yap actually committed to San Jose State. Am I right on that? So, yeah, you just think about how Vance would recruit a player, right? And I know Vance pretty well. I know you look him in the eye, says, do you want to work hard? Do you want to be a part of a winning culture? And do you want to, you know, get some shots up and score some points? That's pretty attractive to a lot of guys. So I think this system is going to attract the type of players that they're going to be able to run the floor and jump and leap and hit threes and all that stuff that I think is going to make things exciting. All right, Jackson, one more question here before I hit a break. Did the Wahlberg hire, do you think it resonated with a lot of people in the Mountain West, thinking maybe coaches and schools? Obviously, there's the quotes from Calipari, right, and from all these big-time guys, you know, George Karl, with in regards to Vance Wahlberg and how smart of a coach he is and how great of a coach he is. So how do you think the Wahlberg hire resonated? We know how it did here. How about elsewhere?
Yeah, it's interesting. Wahlberg has been around. He's well-known. He's created this dribble drive system. It's John Welch, his lead assistant, is well-known. I mean, they're NBA guys. I think basketball coaches who are – I mean, they're all going to be knowledgeable in this conference. They know who these guys are. And at the very least, they're going to know it's going to be a major pain in the butt to play Fresno State twice a year, because they're going to run they're going to play 40 minutes the whole length of the court, and it's going to be uncomfortable for their teams, even if hopefully – you have the talent and the scheme, that would be great. But even if maybe it's tough to get everything together year one, it's going to be, you know, one that, like, you think when you play Air Force, they're going to play that Princeton offense, you know,
yep.
Or football for triple option. It's like, man, you know, even if they're not the best talented team in the conference, it's not fun to play them. So that's going to be Fresno State from that perspective. I don't know how many general fans are seeing Fresno State hired the Clovis West head coach and are understanding the move exactly from that perspective. But if you know what Wahlberg's done, you know, where he's influenced in basketball as a whole, I think it's a really exciting move, and it's going to be really entertaining, I think, for the Valley to see it play out.
Hear, hear. That's Jackson Moore. Great job as always. We'll see you in a couple hours. We'll be down on the field and be checking out some Fresno State football. Thanks as always, my friend.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to bring on Phil Bonatti. You're listening to 1430 ESPN.
877 Astell for special business offers during our semi-annual sale.
Love talking with Jackson Moore. He's super impressive. He mentioned 5,000 miles on his car in the last, what do you say, 30 days, going to Cal, Stanford, practices, obviously now Fresno State. And if you listen to him and the names that he threw out there, he's not trying to impress us. He's informing us, because this dude has no notes. He just walks in. He's got his backpack because he's going to the spring preview. And he just rattles off names like nobody's business, man. That guy is awesome. So thanks to Jackson Moore breaking that down. All right, Phil Bonatti, Fresno State grad, but you're going to get to know him more. He's the new afternoon dude on 1430 ESPN. We can confirm this show, right? Behind the bench?
Behind the bench.
All right, starting next Monday. And I didn't know. I thought it was going to be 3-5, but you're saying 3-6.
That's where we're pushing it. Yeah, I think we're going to push it to 3-6. That's what the decision makers are deciding. And I think it's exciting to have 3 hours of local live sports, including, you know, Bulldog Sports Hour with Tony D as well from 2-3. So we've got that time set up. And I think people can expect a lot of things on their weekdays when it comes to more local coverage. And I'm just excited to be there and be in that time slot.
Are we going Monday through Friday as well?
Monday through Friday,
bonus Friday day as well. All right, so –
Pending Giants baseball, of course.
Of course. I know. Sometimes you get in the car around that time, you're like, oh, Giants baseball or local sports.
I know it's a little weird this week. I think they're on the East Coast, so things will be shuffled around on the schedule. But we'll be there for the Giants pending.
Yeah, and things can get wonky with the Giants. Obviously, they get priority. But yeah, Gabe Camarillo, friend of the show, did an awesome job at 1430, doing great things at Fox Channel 26. And that's my drive. So I got now again. I rail on Highway 99 all the time because it's a mess driving home from work. Mm. So right, national guys are national guys, right? You don't get the local stuff. And so I missed that. So now you're going to fill that spot. So I am super excited. I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about that in a second. But talk about a little bit about your background, where you came from. Again, I mentioned you're from Bay Area high school, but you've been in the TV business as well. So how did you land back here in Fresno?
Yeah, it's quite a journey when you want to get your feet wet in sports media, right? And getting into out of the MCJ department in Fresno State back in 2015. Shout out to Faith Sidlow, Dr. Sidlow out there. She was a phenomenal mentor for me throughout my time there. But of course, found my way to Wyoming out of the TV job, as far as just doing news and just doing reporting. And suddenly something opened up in our station. It went to sports, and they were like, hey, you want to get into sports? And I'm like, okay, I could do that. And so I split my time between sports and news for a little bit. Then I decided to apply to a full-time gig. Ended up getting a look in Bismarck, North Dakota, and took over a weekend anchoring there and was the full sports anchor there. And then obviously the COVID pandemic happened, things were turning upside down out there, and as for especially with everybody's world. But yeah, been out in Bismarck for the last 5 years. But you're looking for a dynamic change in your career, and I just kind of felt like the time has come for me to find something maybe a little closer to home. The folks have been living here for the last 7 years. They were living in the Bay Area, but now back here. And it's good to be closer to home. Made the kind of leap of faith, and the folks at ESPN 1430 are giving me a shot. A TV guy learning how to do radio. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic. But hey, it's been exciting so far.
Well, shoot, 3 hours a day talking about sports, right? As opposed to I know new sportscasters, especially, you go out there, you get your shots, you edit your shots, and sometimes you might only have 6 or 7 minutes on air.
If you're lucky, you get 6 or 7 minutes. It's like you gotta make your point. You gotta pick the most important things. You got to fit it in 4 or 5 minutes. I know I talked to Gabe last week about it because he's the radio guy going to TV, right? And so he's learning that whole process. And you got to get it across. And it is nice to have this platform to really expand on the things you want to talk about, because really you're just hitting the bullet points when you're on TV. Now, you have all this time to really talk about what you want.
And when I bring in some of my TV friends to come on the radio show and have a 20-minute segment, Stephen Hicks and Scott Bemis and a lot of friends out there, they're like, what, that's it? The time's up? I want to talk some more, because they got all this information that they want to get out there in the open, and they only have a little bit of time compared to the radio. So Phil, when people are going to be tuning into your show, mm-hmm. on 1430 ESPN, what can you expect? What do you like to focus on? What are your plans for the show? A lot of local, a lot of Fresno State, some high school stuff, but what else can we expect?
Yeah, so when I think of the name of the show, Behind the Bench, that's really where the big fans are. They're sitting there right in the right where the action is, right where they're, where the players are, and hearing the dynamics of it, and that's where some of the big fans. I remember thinking about back when I was covering state basketball in North Dakota back in March, and they put the press right there behind the bench, and it's one of the most dynamic spots to sit, because you just hear what the coaches are saying. You're really involved in the action, and I always enjoy that fascinating part of the game. So whether you're in basketball, baseball, football, that's kind of the prime spot if you're a really true fan. So for me, I want to bring that real big fan perspective in that sense, and for really any kind of dynamic level of sports, you know, with the high school, with the college, you know, we'll dabble in pro sports as well. We've been kind of dabbling that for a couple weeks, you know, the high noon slot. But I'm here to talk about really anything that anybody really cares about. I'm excited to dive into more of the high school sports. That was really where we were big focus on when I was in North Dakota. That was our bread and butter, per se, because that's really the audience, and people are really care about the guys who are here. I know we're like for the draft, Xavier Worthy, a big name that popped off in the first round. People are really excited about that. Jalen McMillan, another guy that got drafted last night. So I think we went to Tampa. So this is the people, your neighbors, who you're growing up with, and that's really important to me. And I hope to, you know, get to know a lot of people. I'm learning the landscape as we speak, and hopefully can dive into it a little bit more.
Well, obviously, we love our Bulldogs, right? But we really love our high school sports as well. Josh Allen, we count him as one of our own from Fireball, a kid that had zero stars.
I was there when he was in Wyoming. I was
oh gosh, well perfect, right?
Kid. So I was seeing that whole craziness when he was popping up.
I mean, super stud, you know, no stars out of high school. Sent all these letters to anybody and anyone who would take him as a walk on Division I president. I mean, he's just got a long story. So those were blue collar people, as you know. We love our high school sports and yeah, you're going to be a great addition to it. I want to ask you, though, you mentioned watching the NFL draft, and that was cool. I got to listen to you driving home on Thursday. They had the national feed, and then you and Anthony Galavis and Gnarly Charlie were piping in with your
what
thoughts.
Crew.
What a crew is, right, dynamic, right? You got to fend off a couple hardcore Raider fans, but we'll get to that in a second. But what do you think was – the biggest story for you coming back and being on the air? Was it the NFL draft? What was the biggest thing that you guys talked about?
Yeah, you know, the draft and the prep and who was going to go where, especially with locals, especially with, you know, we got a fierce Raider fandom here, even Niner fans here as well. You know, getting in the mindset of what people are thinking as far as the preparation for the – I always say the draft is the most optimistic time in the NFL season. This is where people are most hopeful. And then, obviously, things get crushed right as the team doesn't make the pick you want. So, but I that was really kind of the big buildup, per se. I know not a lot of Fresno State guys are – you know, there's not a whole lot of Fresno State looks as far as the draft. Maybe Carlton Johnson will go today. We'll see what happens. But, it's the exciting – part of just seeing where these guys are going, and especially with the local aspect. I had Chris Maxey on Thursday, and it was good to get his perspective of how he's gearing up for the draft and what his mindset was. He had an interesting point. I mentioned it yesterday. It's like, I really want him to go to Buffalo. I want him to catch passes with Josh Allen. And, of course, Buffalo trades out.
I know. I can't believe it.
And we missed that opportunity to have the Fireball to Central connection, and now he's a Chief.
Well, God, and I mentioned it too in my opener. Can we imagine Xavier Worthy playing the Tyreek Hill, right? Slot position and different. Yeah, I mean, they're gonna have a lot of fun, as if the Chiefs need to get any better after having no wide receivers all year, drop passes. Of course, they win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So, are you, are you going to the spring preview as well?
So
what's your plan with that?
I unfortunately cannot make a commitment to the spring preview today. I have Porch Fest is this weekend, as many of fans are, you know, a lot of people are fans of that. I got my brother who's actually performing down at
really?
Porch Fest.
All right.
He's into the house music, you know, the EDM kind of music, and Casa de Uns, I think he's performing at around 1 o'clock or so. So I'm going to go down there and enjoy Porch Fest. So I promised him I'd go down and support his sets. You know, he's good brother. He's doing a lot of good stuff down there.
Good brother. And then obviously we got the rodeo happen. So tons of stuff, and we got this beautiful weather.
We got the fight
tonight as well. The fight. Jeez,
so much this weekend.
Yeah, who out there says there's nothing good to do in Fresno?
Right,
Clovis. Tons of good stuff. All right, so 2015 grad of Fresno State, like I mentioned, talking with Phil Bonatti. So you were privy as a student to watch Derek and Devontae.
Oh,
how
gosh,
cool was that? And then obviously the NFL stars that they are as well.
Not only those guys, but, you know, Aaron Judge and the baseball side of things, 2012. But can I argue that might have been the best time to go to Fresno State if you wanted to be a sports fan? I had a lot of, you know, even Tyler Johnson and that team, Marvell Harris at the back end of my time being there, the one team that has gone to the NCAA tournament.
Would you go to games, though? How about that? There's a lot of talk now.
I went to a lot of games.
Good for you.
Yeah, I went
to the student section of basketball.
I was right there in the front. Actually, you know, so when I – interesting, we'll probably touch on this. I was a musician also at Fresno State, so I did some of the Bulldog basketball band, so I was always kind of at those games. But when I wasn't, I was always just there in the front row and trying to get the best seat I can. I remember being at the Tark jersey retirement ceremony. I think I can't remember if that was the same game that Paul George bought everyone a ticket.
I think so,
yeah. And that place was packed against San Diego State. I remember seeing Tark walk off the court. It was, you know, powerful stuff. You know, I was right there on the front row of the student section. So, you know, I wish there was I haven't been to a Fresno State basketball game in about since I was at college. So I hear the stories. My parents go all the time. I hear the stories of how, you know, empty it can be now. But hopefully things are going to be
better. It will. So, yeah, so you're talking about how just great a student experience was at that time. So, yeah, Devontae, Derek, Aaron, Judge. Maybe that's a good question to dive in. Like, what was the best era for Fresno State sports, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know,
it's got to be up there.
It's hard to argue with going to school at that time. You know, you could make the Jim Sweeney era. I know that was a whole big thing, and that's when my mom was going to Fresno State, so she had a lot of experience with the team then, and you know, getting to experience all the sports there. But what do you call it? You know, I think we were privileged a little bit with how we were
spoiled.
Yeah, spoiled. That's what we're looking for. You know, as far as you know, the team doing what they're doing. I still, to this day, I'm still can't believe we lost to San Jose State in that.
Oh gosh, that was a nightmare.
Yeah, but
Black Friday. It was a Friday.
I was sitting there,
Black
Friday, in my apartment. We were all ready to, like, all right, we're gonna buy the tickets to the Fiesta Bowl as soon as we win this game. And sure enough,
disaster. You know. And that year, I was looking up some stats. Yesterday, Derek was only one of four quarterbacks in college football history to throw for 5,000 and throw for 50 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he's still underrated and underdrafted, right, that year.
Unbelievable that those guys went as low as they did.
Teddy Bridgewater, right, drafted ahead of Derek.
Yep, that's right. Teams are probably scratching their head at how they missed out on it, especially with Devontae and what he's become, you know, with how he developed in Green Bay. I argue he may be the biggest NFL superstar Fresno State's ever had.
Yep. Aaron Judge, he's a little bit
he was
slow
scary with
start,
the, scary but, with the metal bat. I would say I was not going to sit in foul territory. I was going to sit right behind the plane, you know?
Before they had the screens
before
up
they
there,
had the screens, you know, I was always you know, he had remarkable defense. That was always what I remember, him just ranging on every play. He was just kind of a tall, lankier guy. He wasn't as like Aaron Judgian as he is now,
but. And he's showing it off too. That arm is incredible. You just Google Aaron Judge, you know, throwing guys out at second and home, and yeah, he's got a laser as well. All right, we got a couple minutes here, Phil.
Yeah.
So, Fresno State, but before that, you're a Bay Area guy. However, I just assumed, right? You say, I'm from Bay Area, you're going to be a Niners, Warriors, Giants guy, or maybe A's, right? But that's not the case.
It's an interesting, you know, my dad from Massachusetts, born and raised, but he came over here, you know, he was an air traffic controller, you know, met my mother, but he's from Massachusetts, Duxbury, Mass. And as soon as I was old enough to kind of realize sports and understand what it was, he's like, all right, these are the teams you're going to root for. Patriots, Bruins, you know, Red Sox. This was it. We weren't much into the basketball, but I do remember, this is the only Bay Area tie I have. I remember watching Jason Richardson doing his thing in dunk contests, and I was like, that guy's awesome. And I wanted to root for him, and I started paying attention to the Warriors. Of course, it was a tough time being a Warriors fan from the early 2000s on, but that was the one Bay Area holdover for me growing up in the East Bay, out in Brentwood, California, was where I was up.
So are you going to be walking around town with some Patriots gear, or are you like,
party with the Patriots hat.
I did see that. But so, right now, you're representing well. It's a smart move by wearing that Fresno Tacos.
Oh, I think I'll fit in the Porch Fest. Yeah, the Tacos hat. I love this hat.
There
this is one of my favorite hats I own.
Good call. Good call there. A couple more questions here, Phil. What sport do you identify with most? So, right, like, football is always going to be king, right, in America.
Yeah.
Right? And basketball and baseball, America's pastime. For me, Like, baseball is my number one. Mm-hmm. Basketball, I just love the controlled environment, being on top of the action. Gyms, games are an hour and a half, like that. And I mean, but football, you can't deny it. The most amount of players, everything gears up to Friday night, right? Yep. You school events are scheduled around it. So what do you most identify with?
You know, it's interesting. I think it's a little bit of everything, right? I think for me, basketball is the most fun to cover, just with the conversations around it. Baseball is the most fun to be at, and football is the most fun to talk about. I think if you think of it that way, that's how I always saw it. But in every aspect, I could say I'm a football guy. Maybe first, that's probably the sport I'll sit down and watch the most. And then, you know, I still have that love for baseball. I know I'm like a 30-year-old millennial here, but hey, I'm not trying to let baseball die here. I really enjoy the sport too. So
we won't. We'll never let baseball die here. All right, Phil, great stuff as always. Really looking forward to listening to you during those hours, those 3 to 6 Monday through Friday, and that's starting this Monday. All right, throwing you in.
We should have a good show starting off right there at 3 to 6, and tune in. Should be a lot of fun. We'll have a little local stuff, local conversation. Should be fun.
Should be great. Behind the Bench is what it's called. Thanks for coming in here to First String Sports and for a great conversation. Can't wait to listen. Good job.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Paul.
All right. We're going to take a break here. I'm going to be starting hour number 2 of the Central Valley Sports Report. He's in the house right now, Coach Davey Jones of Hoover. You're listening to 1430 ESPN.
Your home for high school sports. 1430 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader. KFIG World, where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. That's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Hour number 2, the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. You can follow me on the Twitter, on the X. I still kind of feel weird calling it X. To me, it's still Twitter, at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors. I try my best to get scores out there and retweet things I think people would be interested in. But for the most part, I gear up for this show for talking 2 hours, mostly about high school sports. Just have Jackson Moore in hour number 1 talking about Fresno State. I know it's a big time because of the NFL draft. The spring preview is today as well. So, and it's never too early to talk about football. If you miss any parts of any conversation that my show or the other shows on 1430 ESPN, Tony D's show as well, you could go to 1430ESPNFresno.com under podcast. And we do broadcast baseball games as well. We've done 5 so far. We didn't have any this week. San Francisco Giants kind of bumped us off of that. But we're going to be doing a game next week, I think the Friday game. But, we love our high school sports here on 1430 ESPN. And Davey Jones, head coach of Hoover High, is in the house. I see Davey, I don't know, every other week here at First String Sports, coming in and buying stuff and waving at me and doing all this cool stuff. So it's our yearly time, Coach, to have you on the show. I thought it was good timing, especially what you guys did this week. You guys are now 13-11, 7-3 in North Yosemite League action. You guys won 2 games this week, right? Beat Roosevelt twice.
Yeah, we had a good week. Slow start yesterday, but came around, and feel like we're kind of just gearing up for playoffs. And we focus one game at a time, but we have an end goal in mind. So pitching was a little off yesterday, and we kind of count on good pitching to get us going, good defense. But relief came in, bats came alive, and lucky enough to pull out a victory.
You guys beat Roosevelt 13-4, and on Tuesday, what was Tuesday's score?
I think it was 19-3.
Yeah, that was the big one, 19-3. So who was clutching up for you guys? You mentioned your bats came alive in the latter innings yesterday, but who are some dudes that did well in the field?
So we can always count on Aiden Medina, my senior, 4-year starter, big triple, kind of re-energized the team. And he kind of keeps us going. We had Caleb Bosquez, 1-year varsity player for us, 3-for-3 yesterday, stolen base, starting to hit better. Had a freshman, Gio Herrera, been struggling at the plate and been working with him, working on his swing. Had a bases loaded double to the wall that gave us the lead, and just kind of we took off from there. So I was really happy to see the young man pay off what he's been working on in practice, and he just drove a ball to left field, and it really was a big spot for him, for our team. Like I say, moving in later to get those guys swinging the bats well. His brother Robert, I think, had three hits yesterday, had three hits the game before. So that's freshman and sophomore Herrera brothers starting to come alive for us. So
you got a few brothers on the team's last few years.
Yeah, the Medinas, right? Everybody knows the Medinas.
It seems like there's been a Medina on the roster for the last 7 or 8 years.
And pretty soon everybody will know the Herreras because there's another one coming. There'll be three.
Wow, that's awesome. So you guys have won 5 out of your last 6 games. Do you feel, Coach, right now you guys are playing the best baseball of the season?
I think we're playing pretty well. We dropped one to a good Torres team that we felt like we dug ourselves a hole early and we battled back, which I was happy to see us battle back. But we felt as a team in our conversation that is a game we should have won. We usually rely on our defense. Our defense kind of let us down early in that game, and we just couldn't get back. And credit to Torres, they put the bat on the ball. And in high school baseball, that's our mantra: put the ball in play, and make them make plays. And then on the other side, we need to be able to make those routine plays. And I kind of learned that from Coach Donald, right? Three philosophies of high school baseball: pitchers throw strikes, defense makes the routine plays, and at the plate, we put the ball in play and make them earn it. We failed to do that early in that game. But, I think we're playing pretty good baseball right now.
That loss that you're talking about was 9-8, but you responded with 19-3 win over Roosevelt and then a 13-4 win at home. Coach, how many players are you carrying this year at Hoover on varsity?
We were down to 12 on varsity. We had 13 at a couple of points of the year, but for whatever reason, we are sticking with 12.
Sticking with the Hoover 12. What is the JV and the lower levels looking like right now?
JV, I think we started with 15, had some kids run into some academic problems, and you're a student first. That's why it's called a student athlete. So we hold them accountable. Hopefully those kids will figure it out and come back out next year. But a good little group down there, a few Awani kids that have played baseball that we've pulled up for the Easter Classic. They got some time, and we look forward to them helping us out next year. And always trying to build the program. Just sent letters to Awani, to all the kids that played baseball, letting them know what to expect next year, and hopefully just keep them involved.
And you've come on the show and you're very passionate about this, about getting kids involved, right? And you were surprised when you took over the program how few players were in the Little League, in the feeder programs, and you like, we got to do something about this. I'm not going to let Patriot baseball die like this. So you did something about it. What exactly did you do, and how are you seeing the fruits of your labor?
First year, we just we held, I don't even know how we came up with the idea, but we held a big equipment drive. Invited, I reached out to all the coaches and they responded terrifically. All these programs, Memorial, Buchanan, these kids all showed up and donated. They cleaned out the garage. You play baseball long enough, you've got 10 bats in the garage. And we raised a ton of equipment and gloves and stuff. So we donated all that to the Cary League. So they could all have their own equipment. Kids, no excuse, right? I don't have a glove. Okay, we're going to give you a glove. Then this year, got involved with them, trying to help negotiate better rates with the city, because the city has, it's a public park that they play at, and the city has these schedule fees. Now negotiating to let them use our JV field for their older kids when we're done, so they have another place to play. We just, working with Fresno Unified, were able to buy a bunch of brand new equipment to donate to them again, right? So to relieve their costs so they could focus more on getting players in and having the equipment. But I think they're down to under 200 kids. It's just, it's a struggle.
Why do you think that is, Coach? I mean, we can get into this conversation could go a lot of different ways, right?
Yeah.
You know, where we could say, oh, you know, it's the video game generation, which I remember growing up, they kind of called us that too with Atari and Nintendo. But it's like, what are you going to blame it on? Phones, you know, just a lack of participation. COVID certainly didn't help, right? So there's lots of different ways to kind of quantify why this is happening. But what are you seeing and what are you hearing?
Yeah, so I think it's a combination of some of the things you just mentioned. I think COVID, when people sat at home, we didn't let them do outdoor sports. I don't want to get into the opinions on that, but stagnation begets stagnation. And so a lot of kids just stopped. And you're right, the video game generation, right? It also creates stagnation. Travel ball is obviously, it has its place, but it is a detractor from public leagues. Because the better kids are, you know, the parents are going to be told and the kids are going to be told, hey, come to this and pay this money and we're going to get you somewhere. And I don't know if I subscribe to that philosophy. I don't really subscribe to the year-round philosophy at a young age. I think kids should play three sports, four sports. They should be kids. They should take time off. They should develop all-around skills to focus at 8, 9. And I mean, I see ads for 8U travel ball, 7U travel ball year-round.
And rankings as well,
and
like ranking
is,
kids at that age.
To me, yeah. Absurd. But I guess I'm old.
We're not. I mean, we generations come around. We do see some that, right, really good basketball players, baseball players, football players. But I think, Coach, what's missing is the camaraderie, right? You just think about some of these programs where kids have been playing together since they've been 10, and they play together through junior high, and then they up in high school, and you have these championship teams. I think those are becoming almost the way of, you know, the Dodo Bear. That's not happening much anymore. Those teams are winning the championships that we see, whether at San Andreas or on the baseball field or even the football field as well. So I think getting the kids to stay together and play together, that's becoming more and more difficult as well.
100%. I think 9 of the kids on my team all played together in the Carry League. I don't think I'll ever see that again because travel ball, right? They'll play on different teams if they play travel ball, and they'll know each other, but they won't be a unit carrying through.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that's been lost on a lot of programs. And so for Hoover and for Fresno Unified in general, I know, you know, Coach Pappy does an amazing job at Fresno High. You know, Bullard is Bullard, and they got a strong ball club, and Tom Donald does an amazing job. Where do you see, like, athletics in Fresno Unified, right? Where do you see the biggest needs, right, as far as, like, fielding really excellent sports teams all the way around?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a disconnect. I think you look at Clovis Unified, they emphasize athletics. You can see it in their facilities. You can see it in their facility maintenance. And look at those kids on those teams and look at their school performance, right? If we give kids a reason to be in school other than algebra, right, they're going to perform better. I think that correlation is obvious. I don't know that Fresno Unified puts the emphasis on the extracurricular like I would want to see. Investment in facilities, investment in those programs. I have a hard time understanding how the third largest school district in the state doesn't have premier facilities. No lights at varsity baseball and softball fields, right? Some outdated scoreboards, which we're working on, but just that kind of stuff. to make that connection that if, hey, if we build this football program, if we build this softball program and we get 50 kids coming out for baseball and we can, we haven't had a freshman team in I don't know how long, but if we have those kids and then they have a reason to keep their grades up and a reason to come, right, other than just coming to school, I think you would see exponential results.
And when did you get talking with Davey Jones, head baseball coach at Hoover? Talk about your coaching, though. We're going to work backwards a little bit here. Where before coaching baseball, what did you coach some other sports?
No. So I'm from Lemoore, and I was a deputy sheriff in Lemoore for a long time after college. And got involved in coaching in the Babe Ruth down there, and then back when we had American Legion, those kids that had aged out of Babe Ruth, so that 15 to 18 year old when Legion was still a thing. A good friend of mine, Jerry Jordan from Avenel, a little bit older, played, you know, here. We coached, and I probably coached for 12 years down there and loved coaching in the league I grew up in. My daughter went to St. Anthony's. I got involved with Steve Simonian and Danny Macias coaching at St. Anthony's. So I coached 5 or 6 years over there while my daughter was there. Some great kids, great parents, ended up being Memorial kids, some of their better teams. Then when I took the job at Hoover, my first year, I didn't coach anything. Then I was really drawn to Russ Pickett and his philosophy coaching football. And I said, I've never coached football. My dad was a football coach. I know the game. I just want to be around the kids. I want to be involved in what you're doing. So he said, you know, why don't you coach special teams? I said, I can do that. Did a lot of studying, right? Did a lot of research. I think I bring a lot of energy, and so I did that for 2 years. And then after the unfortunate passing away of Sam Flores, Coach Oliver, who's now at City, who had been coaching the program, and Coach Garvin and Coach Sanchez, they all have other life things going on, and they stepped down collectively. I was fortunate enough to get the job, and big job, right? I'd never coached at the varsity level. And thank goodness for Brad Fonts, Tom Donald, Brian Marsubian, Cal Payne, all these guys who had been through, been around, coached, and their mentorship and their advice to kind of help me navigate stuff. So here we are.
How have you seen, Coach, you've mentioned that a few times over the last years, how other coaches have poured into you. Like, how meaningful is that to you? Because, you know, you're not going to get that everywhere, right? You're going to, hey, Hoover, that's a different school. They got to figure it out themselves. But they reached out and lend a helping hand to you.
Yeah, it's, I might get emotional. It's humbling, right? When you talk about Brad Fonts, that guy's a legend. You talk about Tom Donald in high school baseball. Those guys are known and legendary, successful coaches. I think I told you before he came on, Tom and I talk I think every Saturday, and he'll text me during the week. We've had some machine pitch inter squads, and he's good to give me advice. That is humbling, and I think it is unique. I don't know, but I would think it is very unique to the Central Valley, the baseball community in the Central Valley. I think is one of, we all succeed when one succeeds. You know, Andy Zavorak, whose sons play at Bullard, we've become good friends, and we talk a lot of baseball, and those guys are supportive. The Bullard coaches came to our fundraising dinner. We go to their fundraising dinner. I just think it's unique. It's not they're on their own. Who cares? It's let's make Valley baseball better. C. Rodriguez and Emmanuel, great relationship, talk, you know, quite often, and I don't know, talk complain.
You know, figure out the problems of the world
It always comes back to, hey, let's stay grounded. These are 15 and 16-year-old kids, right? But I appreciate all these guys so much. I see you're having Mulligan on today. And Mitch and I don't even know each other, really. But we've talked on the phone and text a lot. And I really appreciate Mitch going through what he's going through. I would check in on him and tell him we're praying for him. You know, he's got some health concerns, and talk a little baseball. And I don't know that these relationships exist outside of the Central Valley. And I think that's always been a thing. I went to the Pete Biden dedication. I see my old coach Clement and Merv Carter and Tom Sharp, who I played some senior baseball with, and all these guys are like, hey, we see what Hoover's doing, and you know, they still pay attention. And I just think that's pretty unique to baseball, Valley baseball in general.
I agree. There is something special, and Central Section it's different in that regard, different in a good way. Support each other. And I love how you said that, Coach. You said, you know, when somebody in the Central Valley wins, we all win, right? We root for our teams when they go to the state playoffs, right? We're cheering for them. We're supporting them on social media or at the games or just talking about it. And I think that is truly a unique thing about the Central Valley.
Yeah, like we talked about this week, right? There's going to be great baseball. Clovis High, JD's doing a great job over there. Patrick at Clovis West. I can't wait to go see one of those games this week. I'm glad they play night games for that very
two of them. Two 6:30 games.
Coach Donald, we're talking, you know, I'll be, if I'm not playing baseball, they're right by my house. So I'll go root for Bullard, right? Especially if they're, no disrespect to the Bakersfield area, but if they're playing Frontier or Liberty or somebody from the coast, you know, I'll put on a Bullard hat. My wife's a Bullard grad. We got to rep a little bit, and I'll root for the Knights all day long.
That's awesome. Good stuff. I want to ask you, too, talking with Davey Jones, head baseball coach at Hoover. You mentioned your career in law enforcement, 17 years, I believe. How did that help prepare you for your job now and for being involved with high school kids, with 15, 16, 17, and maybe a few 18-year-olds? How did that prepare you for this moment?
I probably didn't realize it at the time. So when I was in law enforcement, I was adjunct teaching at West Hills AOJ classes. Didn't really connect with those students. That was online work. When I began teaching at Hoover High School after I retired from law enforcement, you know, that's a central Fresno school. We got a lot of unique situation kids. I love our student body. I love our school. And I would say law enforcement definitely helped prepare me for teaching, in that one thing I learned in law enforcement is everybody's got a story. You don't know their background, right? And in law enforcement, we say today's suspect could be tomorrow's victim, and you have to treat them equally. So it's real important to me. I worked a lot with the high schools when I was in law enforcement, to learn the stories, the background of my students, so that I can connect with them, which helps me teach them better. Same goes with my athletes. I think I read a quote this morning from the head coach of the Detroit Lions, and he said, the more you know your players, right? Students can be interjected there. The more you can push them. If you have a surface level relationship, you cannot push them nearly as hard to their potential, as opposed to, you know their background, you know their story, you know what affects them. You can better push them to reach their potential. And I really, from a pro football coach, I really admire that philosophy. And I think it translates all the way down.
It certainly does. It certainly does. And if you know a kid and you know where maybe their breaking point is, let's be honest, right? You hear this, oh, I treat all the kids the same. Some, come on. Because if you treat one kid really, really hard, because you know you can bring them to this level, you treat another kid really, really hard that might, you might break them, You got to know that difference as a coach, right?
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. You could probably think of a few situations yourself.
Yeah. It's, 12 kids or 25 kids, they all receive differently.
Agree. Talking with Coach Davey Jones of Hoover. We got a couple more minutes here, Coach. I did see you at the Bob Bennett day. Was that Sunday? No, Sunday, right? Or Saturday?
Last Saturday.
That was last Saturday, yeah, 3 o'clock game. Saw you there wearing your Bennett shirt, talking with a bunch of Fresno State guys. Talk about your journey to Fresno State and what that was about and your involvement in the program.
Yeah, so my senior year in high school, junior year actually, I was in a pretty bad car wreck and didn't play my senior year. Prior to that, I was a pretty decent baseball player. Had worked out with Coach Hold at COS. That was kind of going to be my plan. Another player and I were going to go to COS and play baseball and see where that led. Didn't play my senior year. Ended up just going straight to Fresno State. Then after a year at Fresno State, all these guys were playing that I had grown up playing with through Pete Biden baseball camps at Reedley with Coach Hacker and Bennett. Developed some relationships. So walked on one fall, one summer, and really made great connections and really enjoyed Coach Rupsich, Coach Payton, Coach Bennett. Did not make that team. So you could say that I'm like a ceremonial alumni. But, in that time with Coach Bennett, watching the way he coached, and my dad was a coach, so I was always – coaches are probably – when I look back, the biggest influences are coaches. Coach Bennett was – one, he was a master tactician, right? He wrote the book, and he was so good at teaching the details of baseball, but the relationship side of it, right? That Saturday, listening to those stories and talking to those guys and the influence he had on everybody. I mean, so many of those guys went on to coach or do private lessons, right? I think that's a direct reflection on Coach Bennett. And, a couple of golf tournaments with Coach Bennett. I think one he met my father. And every time after that, he would always ask, how's your dad, right? Personal relationships. Recruited my brother a little bit. He ended up at Oral Roberts actually playing alongside Coach Batesel. So comes full circle. But, Coach Bennett was a dude.
Yeah. And the stories that came out about him during that time as well. Obviously, the other side of Coach Bennett, a lot of people don't know this, but he was a great poet. Wrote a book of poetry. I mean, the guy was not only a great motivator, a great communicator, but he had a different side to him that a lot of people don't know about. He was a very reflective person as well, and so are you. I see that quality in you as well, Coach. Thanks, Coach Jones. I always enjoy running into you, whether it's here at First String Sports or it's at another game or it's last Saturday. So your presence is definitely known, and the work that you're doing in the heart of Hoover High School, I know it's a special place for you. It doesn't go unnoticed. So kudos to you, my friend, and keep doing what you're doing. And, heck, go out and just win some more baseball games. Huh? Make some noise as well.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure. Good to see you. And thanks for all the work you do for keeping high school sports in the spotlight. We appreciate I think it's important, and you do a great job.
Thank you. I really appreciate that as well. Okay, we got Mitch Mulligan in the house from Central Baseball. He's got a great story to tell as well. I'm excited for you guys to hear from him. You've been listening to 1430 ESPN.
Day. CSLB license number 102-1919.
We're heavy on the rock today. I love it. 1430 ESPN. Thank you guys for joining us. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. Paul Metters, just had a good talk with Coach Davy Jones of Hoover, and man, that guy, whenever he's on the show, he is always, he's passionate about the kids, and I'm sure that comes through on air. He wants the best for the kids. I mean, the guy is coaching Hoover, and he's got 12 players on varsity. The guy's competing 13-11, but he's passionate about these kids. He's done equipment drives. He's, you know, he's got mentors out there. You know, he readily admits he was in the law enforcement for 17 years before taking over. And he's like, man, I know baseball pretty well. I know how to coach, but I need help as well. So the community has stepped up and helped him, and he's very appreciative of that. So always look forward to talking to Coach Jones. This is a bottom of hour number two. We got about 25 minutes, and yeah, we're talking to Mitch Mulligan right now. He is live here at First String Sports with me. And I hate using this word, Mitch, the former head coach. And it doesn't feel right. There's got to be a better word there. You're not the former head coach. That doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
At Central. I know, but I hate saying that. You probably hate hearing it. But Mitch had to step down earlier this year. A tough decision. Unfortunately, he had a stroke. And I was following on social media through his wife and texted Mitch a couple times about what's going on. So happy to have you the show, Mitch. Yeah, to share your story a bit. Usually when you've come on, I think this is your first time live here.
Yeah,
live in studio. I always ask you, well, what do you got going today? Because I know you got young kids and you're always, you know, either you got a birthday party or trampoline at your house or blowing up balloons or doing something like that on Saturdays. But what's the rest of your Saturday look like?
Well, Paul, I'll let you know right now. We just came from Century Elementary, and our Cardinals got our first win of the year, and we took down the undefeated team, and so the son and the boys were really juiced right now. So it's been a good little start to the Saturday.
You're riding high.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah,
all right. Good. So what time did the game end? It's 11:37 right now.
It got done at 11 o'clock, and so I told Nicole, I go, hey, I got to go see Paul, and then fight through the traffic over here and got here just in time.
All right, so how are you gonna treat your son right after this win? Is he gonna have his choice of a lunch somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
You guys haven't eaten yet, right?
No, we haven't eaten yet. We probably get some ice cream a little bit later. He's got a birthday coming up too, so on Wednesday. So I'm sure he's got a couple of things on his mind to do.
Do you guys have a go-to place?
Well, they just hit up, I think, Minchie's yesterday on the way home from picking my daughter up at North. So
yeah.
We'll see what he wants.
Okay. All right. Minchie's, that's the ice cream, right? With all you can eat toppings,
yeah.
And just loads up.
Load them up.
And then you bring it and they weigh it and it ends up being like $9.24.
Yeah. There's no cheap ice cream anymore.
There's no cheap anything. All right. We're here a year later,
okay.
Right? A lot of things look different.
It's definitely been a different year for sure compared to where we were at last year. And last year we were fighting through the track and just coming off of hosting our Central Classic again and making through all of that craziness. But yeah, so long story short, we can get into it. In September, September 21st, I was at school in the weight room and getting ready to work out with our other strength coach, Coach Ferrante, and I was just kind of stretching and I was rolling out my back. I go to sit up and have a little bit of like blurred vision, I guess I can explain it. So I kind of asked to get a Gatorade, kind of sat up, try to gain my bearings. It took a little while, but then I was, you know, my vision was okay. It was still kind of like off a little bit. So I was like, all right, that's kind of weird. So I kind of just relaxed, drove home. That was on a Thursday, I think, because I remember because the Niners were playing at night and I was juiced to watch the Niners play. So yeah, I just was at home and watching the game, and then I kind of went to bed and I felt like I was having a migraine. I felt like my the back of my head was hurting, kind of like I said, kind of like a migraine. I slept terrible. Woke up the next day, felt a little bit better. Went to my son's cross country match, did all that. So that's Friday. Was still kind of, I don't know, off a little bit, but you know, I'm a guy, not thinking too much about it. Saturday comes around, we do yard work, so Saturday's done, and then Sunday I woke up and I kind of not right, kind of bumping into little things, and so I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go to the doctor. Go to the doctor. They referred me to Clovis Community, and was there for 10 hours waiting. And then they finally brought me back that night, and they said, hey, looks like you had a stroke. And I was kind of like, what the hell?
You're like, strokes are for old people,
yeah.
Right?
And Yeah, and I'm like, I'm 37 years old, yeah. You know, like, I'm not thinking anything about that. So they take me back, and I'm basically there for, I believe, 4 days. They did test after test, and it was craziness in there, you know, and, like, the light was kind of hurting me. And so they didn't have a room, so I was just kind of, like, in the middle of a hallway. And so, yeah, long story short, they released me. They referred me to a doctor, Dr. Valles, and he was going to do this.
A neurologist?
Cardiologist.
Okay.
And so he was going to do, because he found out, they also found a hole in my heart. That's what they believe caused the stroke. Well, unfortunately, he passed like 5 days later in a bad car accident. And so the whole place was kind of like shut down, and they had to like refer. So long story short, they got me into Dr. Tellez and Dr. Javed. And then 3 days before Christmas, they did the heart surgery to repair that, and it went good. And so since then, just kind of been taking it easy. I'm on, I feel like, 85 different pills and stuff a week. But I'm getting better. Not quite myself, but getting close to that point. You know what I mean? And like I was telling you, hopefully in June, when I go back in, they do a bubble study again, then it'll still be closed, and then I can kind of, all right, docs, what meds can I get rid of, what, you know, can stop doing to try to feel normal, because it's definitely not been a normal year. So
yeah, I mean, your life was pretty much turned upside down in those moments.
Yeah, and like I said, it's been, you know, tough on me, but also, like, talking to my wife, it's also been tough on her, and having to see, you know, from her perspective, seeing me go through that stuff. And, you know, with how young we are and how, like, active, I work out 5-6 times a week, and I'm thinking, like, this is not real, you know. We're getting ready for fall baseball and a fall game on that Saturday, and it's like, hey, guys, I can't be there because I'm, you know, in the hospital and not knowing what's going on. So it's definitely been a transition, like, with, like, the coaches. Coach De La Cruz has been in with me forever, and then Coach Harrington and Coach Dower, like, they've stepped in. But it's you know, just been weird. It's even, like, weird, like, having to address the kids, you know, because the kids, like, hey, where's Molly been? It's been 2 days. It's been 3 days. And then kind of having to tell them. And, like, the hardest part was really kind of talking to the seniors, like, hey, you know, this is, like, what's going on. I can't be out there right now. And, you know, by the time that they're seniors, and like Barajas, who's been up since he was a freshman, and then Flash and Maddie have been up since sophomores. And so over that time, like, we're in the weight room. We're together 11 months out of the year, you know, with how baseball is. So it was definitely, like, hard to talk with them. And then when I finally had to tell them, like, in February, when I knew, because that's the kind of thing, like, you know, as I get better, I possibly could do it, possibly work my way back, will myself back. And then I was kind of like, you know, I'm tired at 4:30 in the afternoon. I go, how am I going to gear up for a 6:30, you know, track night game? And, you know, I'd be a wreck. So that was kind of a hard part to kind of come to, and then finally tell them, like, hey, this is, like, you know, I was trying to, I wanted to, but I just can't right now. But, you know, they've been great, though, with just because I still get to see them with Baseball P every day, and I'm out there catching up with them. And they've been really good with me and the relationships that we have, and just kind of talking. And, you know, even just, like, when they're slumping a little bit, what they can, you know, keep them positive. And so they've been really good for me, and just in terms of, like, building me up as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff to wrap around your brain. I think it was February 14th when you sent out a message on social media about you having to step down. Unfortunately, I'm sure that was extremely hard thing to do. But I know that the response has been very, very positive. And, you know, talking with Coach Jones, and he said he's praying for you. So it's just hearing stuff like that, I'm sure.
Coach Jones is one of the first guys to reach out to and say thoughts and prayers. He's a class act, good dude. And, like, well, that was actually one of the things, because we were supposed to play them, I think, like, a week later, and he was texting me, like, hey, you know, are you good for this? And I was actually in the hospital, and I was like, hey, we'll figure it out. I'll talk to my assistant to get it geared up, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it right now. So,
But yeah, he's a good dude.
He is a good dude. I want to ask you though too, just a couple follow-ups and on physically, like what are the doctors saying now?
So right now we're waiting until June, when they'll, I think it's June 27th, I go in and they're going to do, another bubble study. It's like a TEE. And they shoot some, air in, they would just make sure that, it stays closed and doesn't come across. Cause that's what they think led to the blood clot originally, like up to the head. So like once that part is done, then I hope to get off these meds and kind of get back to normal. But I mean, like it seems like every couple weeks something happens. I mean, I had complications from medication that I had fevers for 9 days in a row, and then the other complications, like a cyst that took 20 stitches to remove, and it's just been like this is the first time I really feel like I can be active and kind of myself. Like I'm not. It always seems like there's been like some restrictions, like for, you know, this happens and then you got like 3 weeks before you can do anything. And then this happens and then you got another 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks to do this. So the good news is I can still swing a fungo to my kids team and get out there and do that without pain. But I gotta take it a little bit easy too, cause my peripheral vision's the thing that was kind of impaired. And so like at a certain point, then like I don't see anything. So that's kind of the frustrating part. And, you know, being to Stanford every couple weeks, months, having to do that, it's not been normal. It's not been a normal baseball year for sure.
Talking with Mitch Mulligan from Central High School. So who's been, you mentioned Coach Jones reached out to you, you mentioned your wife as well, but what has that meant to you when people are reaching out? Like, how do you find your motivation to even, you're probably laying in bed some nights like thinking, when am I going to fall asleep? How many hours of sleep am I going to get? I know when I wake up, I'm going to be tired. Like, how are you able to even get through some of those moments?
Family. I mean, definitely the wife and kids. But you talk about coaches. I mean, the coaches community, it's a close, you know, kind of brotherhood, because we're all in the same boat. We're, you know, planning schedules and then games and then fall games and then summer games. And so guys like Coach Prieto and Coach Pappy, I talk to all the time. And we were kind of planning out the Central Classic right before this kind of happened. And I was having some beers with them, mapping out games. And then they were kind of like, dude, what the hell? You know, what's going on? So it's you know, a fraternity of brothers, like with my coaches as well, reaching out. But the day-to-day life is definitely slower, which is probably what I needed. Because last year, you know, having to run a tournament with constant rain and scheduling and then going from, you know, my games, trying to make it out to my son's game, my daughter's games. So this was actually the first time probably ever that I got to see every one of my daughter's softball games. I've been at every one of Connor's baseball games. So the slower pace has not been bad. It's been, I'd say, adjustment, but it's definitely been probably something that I needed. And so that's kind of the good part.
So it's allowed you to step back a bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And just kind of survey everything and life and
from a different point of view, kind of, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Time is flying. I definitely want to talk Mitch about Central, about the program. You mentioned, you know, you had a 4-year guy who I've watched as well. It was like hard for you, cause you want to be there. You want to see the kid all the way through, and I'm sure he wants to be with you. So What's kind of been your role? Are you able to go to games? You sit in the dugout?
So,
I mean, how are you able to navigate that?
I'll be honest. It's hard when they're out there to not be out there like with. And so I've seen a couple games, and I feel myself like, you know, wanting to put a sign on. Doing some, you know, just kind of like, because it's what you normally do.
Sure.
And so, like, you know, that part. I mean, I'm there daily with them for start practices and watch them kind of map their stuff out. Dower kind of jokes around, calls me the GM, come kind of doing the management stuff, you know, like some fundraisers, some the scheduling of the Central Classic, the ordering of baseballs and all the stuff that we need. So kind of taking that part around. But yeah, I mean, I love Central. I've been there, you know, it's my 14th year. I've coached out there 16, and the staff, you know, Biggs and Conway and our principal Edmonds, they've all been, you know, just great supporters, asking how I'm doing, what I need. And so that's the cool part about being in a place for so long, that you build those relationships up. So they've been really great as well.
That's awesome. And Central had a big series this week against North.
Yeah,
and
that Wednesday, just dropped that one.
Well, 3-0, right? Yeah. The guys, North beat Central.
Yeah, Wyatt Johnson threw a good game, too. He threw a good game yesterday.
That Wednesday game, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Marcelo, freshman, comes up. Did he throw, what, 6 1/3?
Six and two-thirds, I believe.
And shuts out one of the top teams in the Central section.
Yeah.
Shut out Clovis North.
You know, he's an interesting kid, freshman. His older brother played for me about 7 years ago. I think that's the age gap. And they're both just, like, stone-faced assassins. Like, there's no emotion on there. I kind of call Von Drago. Because, like, even when he's, like, working out and stuff, there's, like, no expression on his face. And he kind of just, like, pitches in a piece like that. I mean, fastball, cutter. Got a little knuckleball he'll kind of show out there a little bit, too. But he's a good-looking player. Prospect. He can hit, too.
And you've had, obviously, your eye on that kid for a while. You said you coached his brother. So,
yeah,
you knew,
yeah.
Like, it would have been a surprise to you, right? This kid shuts out Clovis North. So you said you've only been able to check out a couple games.
Yeah, a couple games. They got a couple good wins though. They had a good little run in the Easter Classic. They got 3 wins in there. Dropped a tough one to Stockdale, but they've been competing. They're right there. That track's wide open this year.
It is, isn't it? Let's talk about that for a little bit. So Clovis West and Clovis are tied at 8-1 right now.
Yeah.
North is 5-4. Central's 3-6. We're missing Buchanan. Got 2 wins, and East has 2 wins as well.
I think they lost to High yesterday. Did they lose to High yesterday?
They beat them once. They beat them on that Wednesday.
They beat them on the Wednesday.
The same day that the Central beat North.
And then Central has East next week.
What? So, all right. Yeah. So, out of these teams, it's a dogfight, right? We've talked about this before. It's a dogfight in the track. You know what? Knowing what you know of baseball this year, like who are some of the top teams you think are going to be really tough come
well,
playoff time?
I mean, Clovis High has, you know, they have anytime Kasten's on the mound, he's nasty. And then them losing George's hurts. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I've never seen a Buchanan team look as young as they were. And North losing, you know, Wyatt Prieto was a huge loss. You know, because I was talking with Jeff on that Wednesday. Tuesday this week, that they were rolling until he got hurt. I mean, they'd won.
And
like
he can't
10.
Pitch.
Yeah.
I think he's still swing, right?
He's trying. I don't think he swing much this week, though.
Okay.
I think they won the Easter Classic, and I think they won 12 in a row. And when they had him throwing with, you know, Hurdle and the pin, and then that freshman they had, they were tough to beat. I mean, anytime TP at Clovis West is on the mound, he's tough to beat. So, I think, though, once you get down to the playoffs and how the seedings are going to wrap out and what Bakersfield schools are going to start, I think I was seeing Liberty was winning that. Yeah, Liberty, Bakersfield. Tony always has a great team down there. Bakersfield kind of has shown out the last couple of years.
They have.
And that's kind of been the cool thing, though, with the Central Classic and having those early Bakersfield games. You kind of get to see them early, They like that. They relish an opportunity to either come down here and show what they're about. So
well, yeah, they've been showing up in last year's centennial win. It was
yeah,
like
was
we've
wild.
Seen that every once in a while. But you know, when you see a 9 seed.
Yeah, and we played centennial early in the year that year, and we were up like 5 or 6. They came back, but when I saw them go on the run, I was like, how in the heck are they doing this? Because I had seen Frontier play well. Liberty was okay. Buchanan was rolling last year. So it was just kind of like, how is this happening? And then they did it.
Like anything, right? When you get hot and when you believe,
yeah,
anything could happen.
Yeah. I mean,
right?
And Danny was just like, and you know, because he was on a tournament, so I was talking with him. And I was like, man, enjoy the ride, Danny. He goes, yeah, it's just been a fun one. So
how about the track obviously plays 3 games in a week, and I don't know if any other
no.
off the top of my head. Nobody else does it, right?
No, nobody
Everyone's
else
two.
Does it, yeah.
Everyone's two.
Yeah.
I would think then come playoff time, if all your dudes are pretty healthy, that bodes strong because you're only going the two
yeah.
games.
Yeah, it changes everything, right? Because just like with the early season tournament we had, you're only going 2 games a week. The other thing you got to think about though too is the other schools have all been doing this, so they're used to that 2 games a week
mentality. Okay.
which makes it tough in the track when you got to prepare for three. Now, I know there's some schools out there who like the 3-game-a-week series. I was never a fan of it. I always liked the 2 games a week just because of the pitching and be able to plan that out. But you know, they play three, and it does, and that makes for, it always makes for one wacky game. You know what I mean? Like, because 2 games, you kind of have like 2 guys who can throw, sure. And then 1 game is kind of like, well, we can try this, we can try this, and it always seems to get wacky, like a 13-9 game or something crazy like that. So, I think once you get to playoffs, it's more traditional. You got the two games, and that's really when you get lower scoring games too, with the arms that are able to throw.
Who are some of the best arms that you've been able to coach over the years? Where you're like, dude, arms. All right, so I'm throwing this guy out in my playoff
well,
game.
Well, I mean, the one that kind of pops in your head right away is Spolero, who was, you know, as good as they come. His senior year was outstanding. Obviously, he got cut short with he had that little impingement in his bicep. Or else, I mean, shoot, we would have loved to have him in the Valley Championship yeah. game as Clovis East yeah. or in that run we were making to, we were all in Eureka, of all places.
That's right.
That state semis when Nick Dugan, who was a Stanford commit, shoved it up our but that was, I mean, that, you talk about having, you know, a guy like that not pitch and still go on a run because we had guys like Mikey Klein and Aaron McCurley that just had great, you know, years to end it. Warren Virchard last year, he was a stud. But then even all the way back, I remember my first year with Fonts, Jordan Brink was our guy who, I mean, you see what he's been able to do through state and, you know, AAA ball. And I mean, he was as firm as they came too. So those are a couple of ones. Colton Eastman was another one. I mean, shoot, he was a 4-year dominant starter. He's still playing independent ball somewhere. Those are kind of like the main. It always seemed like Central's had arms.
Yeah. And yeah, well, like every 4 years, I feel like there's some special guy that's humping 91, 92.
Yeah. And that's kind of been our bread and butter over the years is having, you know, one of those guys and then trying to find 2 to 3 other guys who can kind of wrinkle some things in and change some speeds and do that. But it always seemed like Central's had a stable of arms, and we've had to try to find and develop hitters and try to find a way to score runs.
Talking with Mitch Mulligan, we got another couple minutes here. Actually, one more minute, Mitch. What's like been the best baseball game, the most intense baseball game you've ever either coached or played in?
Coached or played in, man. Tell you, that Valley Championship game that we had with Clovis East and being able to play at Fresno State, and we were down, you know, 2 runs, and then Dallin and Skyler go back-to-back at Fresno State to tie it, and then we were down – and then we were into the 7th inning, and we had 1 out, and calling hit and run. And getting Skyler to score from first. And then I always say, like, that was like the most fun game to coach to be a part of. And then it ended in a walk-off walk on a strike. And it was just like,
We did that game, and I had it from the perspective, you know, we're talking about the three. It was a 3-0 pitch,
three-o
I think,
count, yeah.
And it was right down.
Yeah.
Right, pretty much down the middle, and we're all waiting, and then he's like, ball, he didn't put up his hand for a strike, so I guess even the batter's like, I guess I'm walking, and
yeah,
I guess we're winning.
Yeah, it was a delayed walk-off walk. So, I mean, I'd say, like, that was the most memorable game to be a part of that we didn't win. I mean, we've had some good wins, but that was one, like, you're at Fresno State Friday night. The place was packed,
yeah, was.
You know what I mean? Like, that
it
atmosphere was just great, and that was one that I always remember.
Good stuff. All right, Mitch, thanks for coming in. We are thinking of you and praying for you, and we hope the best for you. I know it's been a struggle, so reach out whenever you want.
Sure,
we'll be here for
we'll
you.
See you, so. We'll see you around at a game.
See you around at a game. All right, that's Mitch Mulligan from Central. All right, we're wrapping everything up. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First String Sports, Jackson Moore, Phil Benatti, David Jones of Hoover, and you just listened to Mitch Mulligan of Central. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.